You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
How the hell are we feeling? You know how we're feeling? Relieved. That's the word. Relieved. Not pumped up, not excited, not giddy, but relieved because the New York Mets came very, 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 very close to an embarrassing, awful sweep at the hands of the St. Louis Cardinals at Citi Field. And thankfully, for the grace of God, Harrison Bader hit a two-strike single in the bottom of the 11th inning. And for the grace of God, Mark Vientos, who we will spend a lot of time on this pod today, had an incredible moment as he pounds a game-winning two-run home run. But let not that fool you from the fact that the New York Mets had an incredibly frustrating weekend. This was not a great weekend. They lost two out of three to the St. Louis Cardinals and came oh so close to an embarrassing sweep. So my emotion as we record this, Rico, wrapping up the three-game series against the St. Louis Cardinals on a Sunday night, my emotion is that of relief because it could have been a lot worse. Thank you for listening to Rico Bronya, whether you're live or you've downloaded and subscribed. Very much appreciated. This was a weekend, and remember what we all probably thought going into this series against St. Louis. Oh, wow, the Mets are playing another team under 500. Oh, wow, the Mets are back at Citi Field after what was, you know, a rather successful West Coast trip. Started off great, didn't have a lot of success in the middle, finished strong, and here we are, 3-3, we're above 500, let's go. And the story of Friday, and the story of Saturday, and the story of 98% of Sunday's game was the same thing. They can't get a big freaking hit. All night Friday, they couldn't get a big hit. All day Saturday until the very bitter end when Lindor's jumping on that first pitch fastball and hits a home run in an elevator shaft. All through Sunday was they can't get a big hit. And Friday and Saturday, not as much Sunday, followed the same script, which is fall behind, give you a little bit of hope, but come up short. If Harrison Bader doesn't come through with an 0-2 single in the bottom of the 11th inning, we are all collectively losing our mind. Because here's the reality of this recent stretch, and baseball is so funny on how this works. After they won the first two games against the LA Dodgers, and we were all high as a kite, winning on Friday in LA, winning on Saturday in LA, the Mets responded by losing a game in LA, two out of three in San Francisco, and the first two games against the St. Louis Cardinals. Do the math. The Mets had gone on a 1-5 stretch, the same stretch that began the season, the same stretch that caused panic. And they were very close on Sunday to making it 1-6 and making you question everything you started to get giddy about from earlier this season. Now let's go through this series. We got a lot to get to. We'll go to your emails, the roster moves, J.D. Martinez's return, and obviously the big question around Mark Vientos, which I know is kind of the top thing on your mind as a Met fan, which is how the hell could you send this guy back down? And we will address that throughout the podcast. But let's go back to the opener of this series on Friday. We didn't see the best of Jose Buhdo. Now, I'll give Jose Buhdo this. He gives up a three-run home run in the second inning of Friday night. They're down 3-0. He gives up another home run in the third inning to Contreras. And to Jose Buhdo's credit, he settled down and he relatively kept them in the game. Now, the Mets weren't scoring any runs, and I thought that was like I said, it was a story the entire weekend, and it began right out the gate. First inning, they have two on and nobody out, and they do nothing, including Pete Alonso grounding into a double play. They got the leadoff man on in the first three innings of that game on Friday. They scored zero runs. So while Jose Budo put them in a 4-0 hole, the reality is it's about the bats. Because if they can get one or two big hits in the first three innings of the game, they're down 4-2. They're down 4-1. They're not down 4-0. And that what was so frustrating about Friday, because I give Jose Budo a lot of credit. After he gives up those two home runs that he gave up in the second and third inning, he did something important for this team. He not only didn't allow any more runs, he gave them innings. You know, even though they had the off day on Thursday, you still look, especially at the stretch of games they have coming up where they don't have many off days. They play these three games against St. Louis. They play four games against Chicago. They go to Tampa Bay. They have a long stretch of games where they don't have an off day. So on Friday night, beginning of that stretch, I'm looking at Jose Budo giving up the three runs in the second, the run in the third inning, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, they're going to have to go to their bullpen in the fourth inning? And that kind of stuff wears on you. To Jose Budo's credit, he pitched into the sixth inning and came very close to getting through the sixth inning, got the first two outs before he put a couple of guys on base, and then the Mets had to go to their bullpen. So it wasn't a great performance by Jose Budo. I'm not trying to, you know, put him in the Hall of Fame here. 5 2/3 innings, four runs is never really acceptable, but I thought it was at least suitable considering he settled in, and if the Mets had anything going on offensively, they're in the game. And it's the same story. It's been a very similar story all year in which they don't start to hit until late in games, which is a nice attribute that they're hitting late in games. The problem is they seem like they're in holes all the time. So what really frustrated me about Friday was not even Budo's performance. It wasn't even going down 4-0. It was the fact that in the first inning, in the second inning, in the third inning, they had so many opportunities to score runs. Now, I admit, because I am a man that has to give credit even to baseball players I do not like and I don't think are very good, but Tomas Nito looked like a different player on Friday. I mean, that was when he ripped the ground rule double in the third inning, I fell out of my chair. When he hit the bomb behind in the count the fifth inning, the 1-2 pitch that he stroked over the right center field fence, I thought I fell asleep. I thought I took my gummy 2 days early. Like, I was stunned. And I give Tomas Nito credit because even in his third at-bat, he smoked one to left field. Now, we all have to be realistic about this. Tomas Nito still stinks. You know, it's okay to give a man credit and say, wow, I was floored by that rip double. Wow, I was stunned by that home run. And wow, Tomas Nito was the Mets' best offensive player on a Friday night at Citi Field. Like, that's all true, and I have no problem saying it. But the reality is he still stinks. Like that, I can't, like, I'm sorry. I can't look at that one performance and say, you know what? Mendy's right. It should be a clean split between Omar Narvaez and Tomas Nito because that's freaking lunacy. Not that Omar Narvaez is confusing anybody with Johnny Bench, but I do not like the idea of Tomas Nito basically playing 50% of the time. With that said, he was great on Friday, and he was one of the few guys giving them punch. The other guy that gave them punch on Friday, because very few guys did, was J.D. Martinez. And you could see it really early on in his first at-bat, behind in the count, hitting one of the right side through for a base hit. He is a professional hitter. And even though it didn't result in much offense because the Mets only scored two runs on Friday night, we saw what J.D. Martinez can do to this lineup. Even that RBI double, Nito scored them run number one to make it 4-1 in the fifth. They got run number two by J.D. Martinez in the sixth inning on an RBI double. But after that, the Mets did nothing. They could not hit the St. Louis bullpen, and that's what made Friday so frustrating. Budo makes a few mistakes early. He settles down. The Met bullpen, which deserves a lot of credit, and we don't like to give it when it results in a loss, but we need to be fair. Josh Walker came into a really tough spot in the sixth inning, and he struck out Brandon Crawford and left the bases loaded. Jorge Lopez came into a tricky spot in the seventh inning, made it more trickier when he had a throwing error on a pickoff attempt, and he got through the inning by striking out Lars Nootbaar. He gave you a clean eighth. Sean Reed Foley has pitched really well since being activated from the injured list. He gave you a 1-2-3 ninth inning. So after a rocky second and a rocky third, the combination of Jose Budo and the Met bullpen, and we're talking about the back end of the Met bullpen. We're not talking about the top guys, did an outstanding job of keeping them in the game. But the main guys did nothing. Pete took it 0-for-4, even though he hit a couple of balls hard. Francisco Lindor had that double in the sixth inning, but when he came up in a big spot in the eighth inning, he struck out and struck out very, very meekly against Andrew Kittredge. It was not a great at-bat. Brandon Nimmo showed you a pulse. That was a positive. He got on base a couple of times. But the other guy who is now starting to meet my ire, because I think we all as Met fans have that one guy that bothers you. And to a lot of Met fans, it tends to be Francisco Lindor. To some other Met fans, it may be Brandon Nimmo, like Pete Hoffman. He hates Brandon Nimmo. He can't wait to bat him ninth. That's his plan. That's his plot. But Brandon's gotten on base a couple of times recently, so it's kind of hurting his plot. The guy who frustrated me the most this weekend, and it started on Friday night when he took an 0-for-4. It continued on Saturday when he took another 0-for-4. It continued on Sunday when he had a very meek 1-for-5, including at bat in the 11th inning in which he lined out with a runner on third and less than two outs. And the guy I'm talking about is Jeff McNeil. Jeff McNeil has got to get going. It seems like his only base hits, like the base hit he had on Sunday, was like a little dunker, kind of threw his bat at it and dunked it into the outfield. That's fine. I don't care how he gets his hits, but he hasn't got enough hits. Because here's the reality about Jeff McNeil as an offensive player. He doesn't draw a lot of walks. He doesn't hit for a lot of power. So the only way he's a productive offensive player is to get a lot of base hits and hit 320. Like, he's one of those guys where, you know, 280 seems like a decent batting average. And for a guy like Pete Alonso, you'd sign for it. But when you are the kind of hitter that Jeff McNeil is, who does not walk, who does not hit for power, who does not drive the ball, you better hit 320 or else, I don't want to say you're useless. That's probably too strong, but you're not special. And Jeff McNeil is not having that bounce back year that we need, that we hoped, that I have to admit, I sort of expected. I thought we would see more of the batting title McNeil of 22 than the guy from last year. It is early. I admit that. We are still less than a month into the season. But Jeff McNeil had a very quiet weekend. Very quiet weekend. And he's the guy I look at. I know Lindor will take some heat, but he's the guy I look at who's given you nothing. Like, Lindor is giving you start and stops. You know, Lindor will have his bad days like he had on Saturday, because Saturday was obviously maybe one of his worst games as a Met. But then on Sunday, it's a home run. And as we saw back on the West Coast trip, he'll have productive days. Jeff McNeil really hasn't. So when you go back to Friday, it's frustrating that Budo settled in after a rocky start. I give him a kind of a C rating for his performance. Like, it wasn't great, but I thought it showed you something. And for a back of the rotation arm, which is all you're expecting from Jose Budo, it's not terrible, because the reality is, for the Mets to win games, a 5 2/3, 4 runs performance where your bullpen backs you up and gives up nothing should be enough for you to actually come back and win the game. I ain't asking you to score 12 runs. It's not like an Adrian Hauser start. Go out and score 5 runs against the St. Louis Cardinals. And they couldn't do it on Friday night. It was very, very frustrating. But that's the offense. They lost on Friday night because of their offense. And they could not buy a big base hit. On Friday night, they ended up going 2-for-11 with runners in scoring position. They could not hit. They could not get the big hit. And so when they lost on Friday night, it was like, all right, okay. First game, homestand, go win Saturday, go win Sunday, just go win this series. That's what you got to do. Just go out and win this series. And then we get to Saturday, and before you could get your ass settled, before you could get comfortable, if you went to the game, before you could get the hot dog in your mouth, if you were at home, before you can be like, oh, wow, what's going on in the Islander game? Oh, crap, it's going overtime. Before you could do any of that, they get in their ass kicked and they're down 4-0. And you know what we call that? We call that the Hauser special. I answered this question last week. Hey, how long before you turn on Adrian Hauser? How long before you ask for Christian Scott How long before you ask for Joey Lucchese? How long before you say, okay, enough's enough? And I said, not yet. Give it a couple of more starts. That dog crap performance that we saw on Saturday against the Cardinal offense that, let's face it, came in here averaging less than 3.5 runs a game. You're not exactly facing murderer's row. That performance on Saturday moved me in a very quick direction of, all right, my circuit with him is short. My circuit with him is short? Something is short, whatever. My patience is short. And look, they've got Tylor Megill on rehab. They've got David Peterson on rehab. They've got Christian Scott pitching well. They've got Joey Lucchese down there. I mean, they've got options. You know, it's not like the Mets have to run him out there every 5 days. And you know what? I'll tell you this about Adrian Hauser. The Mets don't get enough innings out of their starting pitching. Certainly, he's a part of that. But you stick him in the bullpen to eat up some innings, maybe he actually can be valuable. Because right now, he doesn't give him a chance. What happened on Saturday was unacceptable. And he was lucky. Quite frankly, he was lucky he got to the first inning when he struck out that Cyanide guy to end the first inning. Otherwise, that could have been an even more crooked number. But they're down 4-0 because Adrian Hauser stinks. And here's the part that killed me on Saturday. Actually, there's a lot of parts that killed me on Saturday. Brandon Nimmo leads off the bottom of the first inning against Sonny Gray with a base hit. It's like, okay, you know what? You give up 4 in the top of the first inning. How about this idea? You don't have to get it all back in the bottom of the first inning, but get a run or two. Just get a run or two. They get a gift because Sonny Gray throws a wild pitch. And so the Mets are set up with a runner on second, nobody out, 4-0 game. And these are the little things that kill me. These are the little things that give me signs on if we're going to win a game or not win a game. Obviously down 4-0. I mean, the signs were there we were not going to win a game. But get a run back. You know, you don't have to get it all back, but get a run back. And Nimmo is on second with nobody out, and Francisco Lindor struck out. Francisco Lindor striking out on pitches in the dirt became a storyline on Saturday's game. Now, because he strikes out doesn't mean the Mets can't score a run. Doesn't mean Pete Alonso can't, you know, rip one up the alley. He doesn't. He flied out to right field. Doesn't mean J.D. Martinez in his second Met game can't come through. He doesn't. He strikes out. So the Mets have this golden opportunity. It's so similar to Friday. To just get back in the game. Just get a run. They do nothing. Second inning, they get the leadoff man on DJ Stewart, singles off Sonny Gray. I'm like, ah, here we go. Another opportunity. Same crap. I think it took Sonny Gray about 5 pitches before he got McNeil, who's done nothing, Tyrone Taylor to pop up, and Brett Beatty to fly out. And at this point, I'm thinking to myself, you know, Sonny Gray is one of the better pitchers in Major League Baseball. You're already down 4-0. He gave you a chance to get back in this game, and you do nothing. Now, back to Adrian Hauser. He stinks because he walks the leadoff man in the third inning, looks like he's going to get through it, gives up an RBI double to Nolan Gorman. Runs into trouble in the fourth inning, lucky as hell to get out of it. Runs into trouble in the fifth inning, and then finally Carlos Mendoza says, what the hell am I supposed to do? I'm going to go to my bullpen again early. Again, I'll go to this Josh Walker because why not? Let me go to this guy. We're already down 5-0 to Sonny Gray. We're probably going to lose. If he pitches well, great. If he doesn't, let's not waste a valuable arm. We're probably going to send him down to AAA anyway. By the way, they did. And Josh Walker does another great job. Another great job. He comes into a really tricky spot. He balks in a run, which is not the great job. But then he gets out of the rest of the inning. And then he goes out and gets 2 more guys out the following inning. So it was, look, he gives up the run on the balk, which I'm still not even sure what he actually did. But it was another example of not even the best of the Met bullpen, but the back of the Met bullpen coming in and doing a pretty good job. They did it again with this Deedeniel Nunez when he came in. He comes in. He looks very good. Gets out of trouble. Jake Diekman comes in. Gets out of trouble. But then they gave up an insurance run on the sac fly, which kind of sucked. But the Met bullpen kept them in the game. Like when you go to your bullpen in the fifth inning, you know, and that bullpen proceeds to only give up 1 run and get, how many outs are you getting? 6, 7, 8, 9. You're getting 11 outs. The Met bullpen for the second straight day does a fairly good job keeping them in it. Now, this time they would at least attempt to come back. Brandon Nimmo had a big 2-run single that was helped out by a rare error by Nolan Arenado. Pete Alonso with his 200th home run, which was cool to see. And they're back in this game. It's a 6-4 game. But that's what we call the tease, ladies and gentlemen, because the Met bats did nothing after that. Nothing. Jeff McNeil pops up. Tyrone Taylor grounds into a double play. And even though that could have been a really nice victory with the bullpen holding it and the Mets offense finally waking up, it turned out to be the same story. Put yourself in an early hole. Have your starting pitcher not be able to complete deep into the game. Have to overuse your bullpen to the point where you're going to send a guy down who's pitched well, hello Josh Walker, and then come up short. Now let's get to that ninth inning, because that's where the Mets again suck you in just a little bit against Cardinals closer Ryan Helsley. Jeff McNeil strikes out on three pitches because he stinks.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
They get a nice at-bat from Tyrone Taylor behind in the count, singling off Helsley. Then you get Mark Vientos. Now, they pinch hit for Beatty in the seventh inning against the left-hander Jojo Romero. And I liked it. I really did. I got an email, and we'll go through the emails later because there's a wide range of emotion emails because of the fact that things were so bad for a while, and then, yes, they finished things pretty good. Actually, I don't even think it was an email. I think it was a direct message on social media from Igor. Igor writes, "This is such bad managing, taking Beatty out for Vientos and then having to use Nito for Omar Narvaez. It's minor league stuff here. Just let Beatty hit, and then you use Vientos for Narvaez." So here's his point, and it's interesting. In the seventh inning, Jojo Romero is in this game. At this point, it's 6-4. He's a lefty. You've got Beatty, you've got Narvaez, and you've got Nimmo coming up. His point is, let Beatty hit, then use Vientos for Narvaez, and then just have Nito come in for Vientos. Here's why I disagree, though I think it's an interesting idea. I don't like Tomas Nito. So using Tomas Nito to pinch hit and have him get two at-bats and he would end up getting one in the ninth inning is not ideal. But what's also not ideal is having Vientos not be in the game for more than one at-bat. Like, if I'm going to use him, I don't want to use him and then lose him. So if we follow Igor's idea, who I respectfully disagree with, I don't think it's like a terrible idea. We're baseballing it, if you will. If you follow his idea and you let Beatty face the lefty and then use Vientos for Narvaez, Vientos is now out of the game. I like the idea, especially because he wasn't going to get much of an opportunity. Now, that's obviously may change based on what he's done and the limited at-bats he's had, but I didn't mind in the seventh inning using Vientos for Beatty. But what I may have done differently, and this is a little bit of a change-up on this, is not pinch hit Narvaez with Nito. Because I don't have to. I can let Narvaez take that at-bat against the lefty, even though that's less than ideal, knowing that his next at-bat is probably going to be against a right-handed pitcher, maybe in the ninth inning. Who knew what the situation would be? So I liked Vientos for Beatty. I didn't as much like Nito for Narvaez. And both guys ended up getting two opportunities. So when Vientos pinch hit in the seventh inning, he flied out to right field. He's only out this season. Nito struck out, not a surprise, and then the inning kind of went away, but both had to stay in the game because they were pinch hitting for guys in the field. What I would have done is I would have used Vientos. I agreed with that move. I would have kept Narvaez in the game, thinking even Nito as a righty doesn't give me that much of an advantage against a lefty, and later in the game, assuming the game is close, I know a righty is going to be on the mound because the only other two lefties they have in their bullpen, Libertor, who we saw on Sunday, and King, they're not the high-end relievers. If they're in the game, it means the game's not close. So, interesting managing there. Disagree with Mendy slightly. I disagree with Igor. We all have different opinions. Bottom line is this. Here's the bottom line out of all of that.
Mark Vientos was now batting in the ninth inning against Ryan Helsley. That's what mattered. And in that sequence, with one on and one out, the Mets are now down by 3 runs in this game because the Cardinals got that insurance run. I thought the game was over. And, you know, we saw Mark Vientos have one at bat. You know, he flied out to right field. Now he's facing a right-hander who throws 102 miles an hour. So my thought was he was going to strike out. He rips a base hit up the middle. I'm like, oh, okay. Got the tying run at the plate. What sucked is having Tomas Nito up. So if he doesn't pinch hit Nito for Narvaez and it's Narvaez up with 2 on, 1 out, look, who the hell knows? Narvaez may bounce into a double play. The game ends. But I would have liked my chances a little bit better. When Nito came up in the ninth inning, and I was watching this game with my dad. We visited my family on Saturday. I was not at this game. I looked at him and said, all I want is Nito not to ground into a double play. That's it. He strikes out, he strikes out. He pops up, he pops up. Do not end this game. Just give Brandon Nimmo an opportunity as the tying run. Now, luckily, Nito hit that weak little pop-up to first base. Great. Nimmo has the awesome at-bat, and he walks. And we are set up on Saturday with a situation that had a chance to be like that defining moment, that memory of 2024, and maybe the thing that fully gets Lindor going. Bases loaded, 2 out, bottom of the ninth inning, down by 3 runs. And oh, by the way, Lindor is not only 0 for 4 with 4 strikeouts, it felt like every one of them were on 3 pitches. They weren't, but it felt that way. He was overwhelmed by the strikeouts that he had, 3 of which against Sonny Gray, 1 of which against Andrew Kittredge. So he comes up. We're all thinking the same thing. Could Lindor give us that magic? And I don't blame him for swinging at the first pitch because Ryan Helsley has now thrown a lot of pitches. He pitched the night before. You think to yourself after a Nimmo walk, I'm going to get a fastball to hit. And if I can jump on it, I can do major damage. And instead, he freaking pops it up. And it sucked. That's a sucky moment. Pete Hoffman has brought his dog into the Rico for the first time. Hello, dog.
Yes, this is Joni. You know what? I got to be honest. I love that Lindor swung at the first pitch. It's something that if you look at his stats, he does the best when he swings at the first pitch. It's just statistical. It's proven. He's always hit better swinging at the first pitch. I know it sucks. I know you want a built worker count. There was momentum. But he's always the best after jumping on a fastball.
I have no problem with him swinging at the first pitch. I just had a problem with it being a freaking crap pop-up to shortstop.
Yeah, that sucked. That was awful.
Oh, that's your... No, I'm not ripping him for swinging at the first pitch. It was just... It was frustrating. That had a chance to be an epic moment. That had a chance to be a great moment, especially for him. He's had a very start and... start and stop kind of run where we think he's breaking out of it. He has the big game on Wednesday against San Francisco. He gets very quiet on Friday night. He does have that double. He has possibly the worst game he's had all year on Saturday. And then on Sunday, it looks like maybe he's getting hot again when he hits the opposite field home run. So he's showing a pulse. He's not slumping nearly as much as he did over the first few weeks of the season, but it's very start and stop with him. But the biggest situation and the biggest moment found him on Saturday. And that's why I think the lasting memory for most Met fans from that game on Saturday is bases loaded, 2 out, bottom of the ninth inning, Lindor pops up. There was a lot of other things that contributed to that loss, but that turned out to be like that moment that sticks with you.
Yeah, it definitely is going to be the one that stands out. But I do have to say that even though maybe he just – it's a lot of stop and starts with Lindor, I do have to say that he has now been consistent. He's getting big hits and big spots throughout games. Maybe it's not the biggest moments, but he is contributing. This is not the first week of the season. So I felt like he was going to come through. I really did.
Yeah. Yeah. It was so brief. Like in that moment, I'm trying to think. I want to be honest. Like, what did I think was actually going to happen? I'm sitting there, not my parents' house. I'm like, all right, well, the game's coming down to this. That's kind of cool. I don't think I ever had enough time to really marinate what I thought was going to happen. And unfortunately, it ended with a pop-up. Now, you get to Sunday. You get to the finale of this series. Now it's desperation. You can't get swept by the St. Louis Cardinals. I mean, you can, will be upset on the Rico. Met fans will start to panic again. You'll be under 500. So you can, but you can't. It would be a damaging loss to lose the finale to the St. Louis Cardinals. And I went to this game on Sunday. I went a little bougie on Sunday because I found Delta Sky 360. That's the lower level where they give you the unlimited food and the unlimited drink, which I didn't find out about till last year. I was able to find two tickets on SeatGeek because my wife loves it. Like, she loves going to Met games if I can boosh her up and bring her into that section. And so for me, who, you know, loves going to Met games and is like, great, my wife wants to go, I was all ready to boosh her up. And I could not believe it. I found two tickets for $110 a ticket, which is, trust me, $110 is nothing to sneeze at. But in that section is well below what anyone ever charges. So I don't know if it was a mistake. I don't know if the guy was just, or the gal was just like, I got to get rid of these freaking tickets. I don't want to deal with it. Put it this way. The face value for my seats up in the 300s is the same amount of money. So it was a steal. And so I bouged it up on Sunday. Had a couple of cocktails. Ate some sushi. I only ate the sushi because my wife brought it for me. I had a hot dog. She had a good time. And it was a gorgeous, gorgeous Sunday afternoon. 75 degrees. The sun is out. I put the Knick game on my tablet just so we could keep abreast of the situation. That's a Sunday afternoon. The kids were with the in-laws. It was like, this is a party. And then, of course, the Mets again. I mean, it was the same freak. It was the same crap. They have opportunities against Lance Lynn. They can't do anything. In the second inning, DJ Stewart draws a walk. Tyrone Taylor hits a ball that off the bat I thought was going up against the fence. And Brendan Donovan put his stamp on the game. He made like three great defensive plays in left field, including that play. Harrison Bader grounds in with double play. They get the leadoff man out in the fourth inning. They can't get a run home. They get second and third, one out in the fifth inning. They can't get a run home. It's the same crap. The only difference, and this is a significant difference, is that Jose Quintana came to play. That was the difference. That the Mets actually did something that I was starting to get convinced we were never going to see. And that's a starting pitcher not only going to the seventh inning, but going to the eighth inning. Jose Quintana was utterly brilliant. Outside of the one moment in the fifth inning, he gives up the double to Mason Winn. You guys may have to help me out on this because I'm at the game. I look down for a second when Mike Sinai, however you pronounce it, lays down the bunt to third base and Brett Beatty can't make the play. And they called it an error. And at least from where I was watching, I thought it was just an infield hit. Like, I thought that was going to be a tricky play. But anyhow, they called it an error, whatever. That's my own score booking in issues. But that's the only run that St. Louis got off Jose Quintana. And he was great. And what I loved was that Carlos Mendoza kept pushing him. That Carlos Mendoza didn't say after six innings and a low pitch count, you know what? I'm done. Let me take him out. He lets him start the seventh inning where he pitches a 1-2-3 inning. He lets him start the eighth inning where he pitches a 1-2-3 inning. Jose Quintana was brilliant. He retired the last 11 guys after he gave up that run and gave you probably the best pound-for-pound start of the year, and so needed because of how early in a game the Mets have been using their bullpen. Now, granted, they hadn't used their top-end guys, so even though they were using their bullpen a lot on Friday and Saturday, Diaz didn't pitch, Otto didn't pitch, Garrett didn't pitch. I get all that, but still. Like, it was awesome to see a starting pitcher go deep into a game, and that's what Quintana did. Now, the Mets were able to get that run back. Francisco Lindor, we've kind of alluded to it, gave you a good moment by going Oppo Taco, a little left center field action to tie the game up at one. But even right after that, they get a walk from Alonso, a base hit from DJ Stewart, and they've got two on, and they've got nobody out. They've got Ollie Marmol going to the bullpen. Here comes Ryan Fernandez, and they do nothing. Now, tell me if I'm crazy. We haven't seen enough of Tyrone Taylor. We're still learning about Tyrone Taylor. 2-1, nobody out. Tie game, bottom of the sixth inning. We can't punt. We just can't lay a bunt down. You got McNeil and Bader coming up next. I just don't think it's a terrible idea. But it wasn't even an option. Wasn't even a thought. Let me look at how many times Tyrone Taylor has sack bunted in his major league career. And I'm sure the answer is like never, because that's major league baseball. I haven't seen enough of Tyrone Taylor. Like, there are certain guys where you know DJ Stewart is not laying a bunt down. In Tyrone Taylor's career, he has laid down one sacrifice bunt. Actually happened this year. That's right. He did have a sack bunt this year. Only time. Now, maybe the sixth inning is too early to do it. I'm sure a lot of people listening don't like that idea because the bunt has died, but I certainly thought about it. And then he strikes out. And then Jeff McNeil flies out the right field and Bader lines out. And that's another inning that goes nowhere. The worst one, though, is the eighth inning. The eighth was the worst. They get a leadoff walk by Francisco Lindor. Pete Alonso draws a walk after Lindor steals second. They got 2-1, nobody out. Same thing, by the way, with DJ Stewart up. Can he lay down a bunt? Of course not. Now, I can't complain too much because his ground out turned into the exact same thing and advanced both of those runners to second and third. And then Tyrone Taylor grounds out. Lindor's running on contact. He's out at the plate. And freaking Jeff McNeil grounds out. My guy, Jeff McNeil. Every big spot found him, and he responded by doing nothing. So again, the Mets could not buy a big hit. At that point, when Jeff McNeil grounded out in the bottom of the eighth inning, the New York Mets were 0 for 11 with runners in scoring position. 0 for 11, just in that game. Just in that game. The good news is Edwin Diaz dominates the ninth. That's the good news. The bad news is Mets can't score in the bottom of the ninth. And here's my poor wife at an extra inning game. But you know what? She didn't give a rat's ass because we had free booze, a lot of food, and because of the pitch clock, we're still under 3 hours. So I got to tell you, I'm in my glory. And then a photographer who works for the Mets comes up to me and says, Evan, do you like the extra inning rule? And I said, I hate it. I hate it with every fiber in my body. And then I turned to my wife and I said, but she loves it because she knows we're going home in the next half hour. Oh boy. And then we get the dopey extra inning rule. And how great was Reed Garrett, by the way, in that top of the 10th inning, runner on second, nobody out, ground out, strikeout, intentional walk, strikeout. Reed Garrett continues to be really, really impressive. What do we do in the bottom of the 10th inning? What do we do? Lindor flies out, advances the runner. I give him credit for that. Walk Alonso. And as I'm explaining to my wife, because she's like, why did they walk Alonso? Why? I said, because DJ Stewart is likely to ground into a double play. And as I'm saying double play, he hits the ball to second base for the 4-6-3 double play. Couldn't even get the freaking words out of my mouth. And we're off to the 11th inning, where Reed Garrett makes the one mistake. First pitch, I think it was a first pitch fastball. Brendan Donovan rips the base hit. We're down by a run. Luckily, Wilson Contreras forgot how many outs there were, and Garrett was able to get through the inning on that little pop up the shortstop double play. But bottom of the 11th inning, down a run. I'm looking around at Citi Field. Beautiful out. Good crowd, or at least a decent crowd. 30,000 people on a beautiful Sunday afternoon. I guess you could argue it's not a good crowd. Whatever. It's better than what they've normally got. And I'm looking around, and all I could think about was Rico Brogna. And I don't mean the player, I mean the podcast. And I was thinking about, oh God, we're going to come on, we're going to do a podcast, and it is probably going to be the most disgusted I've been all season long. More so than the first series of the year, more so than even what was going on in the Detroit series. I think I was going to walk into this Rico and be more disgusted as I looked around at the ballpark because of everything I just described. They couldn't buy a big effing hit all weekend. And now, because of one bad pitch by Reed Garrett, who's been nearly perfect as a New York Met this season, they're on the precipice of losing this game and getting swept by St. Louis. Not only is this an awful, awful, awful loss, but it's an awful loss in a series in which you're about to be swept by the Cardinals. So it's an awful loss, but then you combine it with what happened on Saturday and what happened on Friday, and for the latter part of April, I was about to be disgusted. And there was nothing in that bottom of the 11th inning that told me something different was going to happen. Meanwhile, they're facing Matthew Libertor for like the fourth inning in a row because Ollie Marmol's got a tired bullpen. Tyrone Taylor grounds out. Jeff McNeil lines out. And I'm looking at her saying, boy, they suck. We're back to sucking. Bader fouls a ball off. They're behind 0-2. Is there anybody out there? 0-2 on Bader, 2-1, bottom of the 11th. Is there anybody who actually thought the Mets were going to win the game at that point? Like anybody. Now, Hoff, I know you love Bader. You love the guy, and that's great. He's a wonderful guy. He's a local guy. But 0-2, bottom of the 11th. Did you think there was a shot the Mets were going to come back at that point?
You want the honest answer?
Yes.
What? No. I did not. I really wanted it to happen, but there was no chance. I honestly thought, I was like, wow, this is a bad series sweep by the Cardinals, and we're screwed. But I was wrong, thankfully.
Oh, we were all wrong. We were all wrong. It's 0-2. I got like my pen and my scorebook ready to shut it, because once this game is over, I want to hightail it the hell out. And he ripped that single to center field. And I turned to my wife. I said, I'm stunned. Like, that was my reaction. I'm stunned. I am absolutely floored that they came back and tied the game. Now, it doesn't mean we're going to win the game, because at that point, it looks like we're going to the 12th inning with another runner on second base situation in the 12th inning. And Adam Ottavino was warming up, so it would have been Otto that came into pitch, and he was going to face Paul Goldschmidt with a runner on second base and nobody out. But there was a sigh of relief, and that is the word of the day, when Bader hit that single to center field, because at least I knew, all right, stay of execution, we have a shot. And then we get to Mark Vientos. Let's get to the headline. He's behind in the count, 1-2. We're all ready for the 12th inning. And then off the bat, I thought, fly out the center field from my vantage point. I thought, you know, hit the ball well. I think that ball is going to be caught. And it just kept going and going and going. And Sinai leaps up at the wall, or Sinai, however you pronounce his name. And as that ball is off the top, and Sinai is jumping, and I see his glove like fall over the wall, I jumped up in the air and had that childlike excitement. Because A, not only did the Mets win the damn game, B, not only did they survive what would have been maybe their worst loss of the season, probably their worst loss of the season, and definitely their worst series of the season, but Mark Vientos has to make everybody think. He's got to make everybody think about numerous things. Game-winning home run, 3-for-4 since the recall, makes you think of many things. Let's start off with number one. Let's go with number one, a very peaceful number one, and that is, why hasn't he been here for a month? You know, and I'm not Monday morning quarterbacking if you're new to the Rico. When they set the roster and they gave us Zach effing Short, my response was, why? This is Vientos' moment. Let him DH. Let him get some at-bats at third base. When JD comes back, we'll figure it out. But give him an opportunity. And the Mets didn't. And instead, we were given a waste of time with Zach Short. He wasn't that good defensively. He barely played. He wasn't much of a hitter. And then, of course, when JD came back, goodbye, Zach Short. See you later. Thanks for coming. So question number one is, to David Stearns, why? And that's not a Monday morning quarterback from me and a lot of listeners to the Rico. This was a question going back to March. He should have been on the roster. That doesn't mean he was going to hit. I have no idea. But when he does hit after his recall, it's fair to ask that question. So number one, why hasn't he been here for a month? Number two, has this guy figured it out? Now, it's only three at-bats, but three important at-bats, or three hits in four at-bats, I should say. Three important hits. Because when Mark Vientos was added to the roster on Saturday because of Starling Marte going on the bereavement list, Marte went on the bereavement list. He didn't go on the injured list. He is presumably going to be back relatively soon, which means Mark Vientos is only here for a couple days. And by the way, the reason it was him, because my dad asked, like, well, why call him up if it's only going to be a couple of days? And I said, look at their 40-man. They don't have any other option. Like, they're not going to add someone to the 40-man roster just to have for 2 or 3 days. May as well just call Mark Vientos up. So number two is Mark Vientos figured it out. But then number three, how do you send him back down? You can't. This reminds me, reminds many of Mike Jacobs in 2005 when he was up here temporarily, hit a couple of home runs, and it was Pedro Martinez who came out publicly and said, we can't send him down. So let's just start with that. Mark Vientos cannot be sent down. Do you agree with that statement, Pete? That he needs to remain here at least for a few more days?
Yes, I agree.
So that's the easy part. And I'm sure most Met fans are thinking the same thing. Yeah, man, you got to honor what he's accomplished. What he's accomplished was a shocking base hit in the ninth inning of Saturday's game. In which no one thought he was going to get it off Ryan Helsley. You combine that with another base hit in the ninth inning of Sunday's game. And you combine that, by the way, both behind in the count. And then you combine that with the game-winning home run. You have to reward that success by not sending him down. That's the easy part. Now the tough part, who goes down? Who goes down? When Starling Marte returns back to us, and whatever his loss is, obviously condolences with him. I don't know if that's come out public, but one thing about Starling Marte, man, is he's dealt with a lot of loss in his life. I think he lost his wife a couple of years ago. So hoping for the best for Starling Marte. But he's going to come back. So when he comes back, here are your options. I'm going to tell you your options right now. And then Pete Hoffman will vote on what his favorite option is. And you, whether you're listening in your car or watching on YouTube or doing whatever the hell you're doing, you can speak publicly to the telephone or cell phone or radio or computer and say, this is what I would do. But here are your options. Number one, they could send down DJ Stewart. That is an option. DJ Stewart has options. So DJ, who's been, you know, relatively productive, he has hit three home runs. He has driven in 11 runs. He was hitting cleanup on Sunday. Nice little left-handed bat off the bench. DJ Stewart has options. You can send him down. That is option number one. Option number two, you can send Brett Beatty down. Now, that may sound crazy. Brett Beatty has looked more confident. He's looked better at third base. But he's also 3 for his last 23 since he came back from the injured hamstring. You could also put him on the fake injured list as opposed to sending him down. You know, you could channel Billy Epler and say, you know, that hammy, it's actually bothering him. So Brett Beatty, whether it's fake IL or being sent down, which means Mark Vientos is your third baseman now for the next couple of weeks, 10 days at least, maybe a little Joey Wendell sprinkled in, that's option number two. Those are, I repeat, those are your only position player options, barring someone else being hurt, obviously. Like, you're going to tell me Harrison Bader's got a sore ass? Fine, he can go on the injured list. You want to tell me Starling Marte has an injury? He comes back from bereavement. Obviously, injured list scenarios change all of this, but in terms of being real, those are the only two position players they can send down. You want to give me DFA Joey Wendell? I mean, I'm sure some people are thinking that. They're not doing that. By the way, nor would that be smart. It just wouldn't be. Who's your backup shortstop? You know what I mean? Like, it's not a smart move. So, but I'll include that, though, because I want to give everybody all the different options you have, because it's not easy figuring out how to get Vientos on this roster, how to keep him. So we've got DFA Joey Wendell, not a fan. Send down or fake IL for Brett Beatty. Send down DJ Stewart. But there is a fourth option. And I can promise you, they will not do it.
I think I know it. DFA Michael Tonkin again.
You're close, though. Take a pitcher away. You know, Danny Young was just added to the roster. He replaced Josh Walker. Send him down. Now, the reason why the Mets aren't going to do that is because their starting pitching so rarely goes deep into games, which we've talked about, and they're so heavily reliant on their bullpen to the point where even having eight guys in their pen, they still need to kind of do that Syracuse train routine where they DFA someone, they call someone up, they send someone down. Like, you just saw it today or Sunday with Josh Walker being sent down after pitching well just so they can get another body up there. So I don't think they're going to do it, but you're allowed to do it. It's an option if you're looking for a way for Vientos to be on this roster. So those are the options. I will now tell you what I would do. And what I would do is I would option DJ Stewart down at AAA. That would be my option. I would tell DJ, look, you haven't been bad. You've been productive. You're probably going to be back here at some point, but we want to give Vientos a longer look. That's what I would do.
I here's the thing is, Brett Beatty, I am a fan of him right now. Like, I enjoy that he came back this year, batted better. But, and I do think he needs more time at third base. He's been looking good. But if there's something ailing him right now, to be, and I'm being fair, because he has slumped since he's been back. If there's something still ailing him, why not put him on the IL? Why not give him a breather? Why not give him a rest? Easiest so that you don't have to touch anything else.
Because he's not hurt. And because Billy Epler got fined and fired for making up injuries. Look, if you can send Brett Beatty down. I mean, that's a very easy kind of clean way to do this. And then give Vientos a look because he'll play every day at third base. I mean, one of the pushbacks you could have on me is, all right, Evan, you've sent DJ Stewart down. Great. You've figured out how for Vientos to stay on the roster. When does he play now? Like, for example, the Mets are about to play the Chicago Cubs in a four-game series, and I can tell you that the Cubs have right-handed starters going in every single game. So what are you doing? Are you just playing Vientos over Beatty against certain right-handers? And if that's the case, then maybe you just cleanly send Beatty down, and Mark Vientos is your third baseman for the next 2 weeks, and you give him a look. And that's the way you could present it to Brett Beatty. Like, look, you're not gone forever. Vientos has earned this. He hit at AAA. He's been hitting in the 2 days he's been up here. We're going to send Brett down. We're going to send you down. You'll probably be back. Here's Vientos getting that option to play for the next 2 weeks. One thing Carlos Mendoza said, he was asked after the game, is Vientos going to stick around? He did not confirm that he would, but did say, I expect him to be in the lineup tomorrow, as in Monday. And I think that's interesting because Jameson Taillon is on the mound for the Chicago Cubs. So is Vientos playing instead of Brett Beatty? I assume he's not playing instead of J.D. Martinez, who did not play Sunday. And I certainly also assume he's not playing instead of Pete Alonso. So does that mean we're going to start to see Beatty sit against right-handed pitching for Mark Vientos? It'll be interesting. Keep an eye on it. I mean, the fact he's going to be in the lineup tomorrow against the righty shows you that the Mets are saying, you know what, he's hot, let's give him a look. And what if he goes 3-for-5? Now, what if he goes 0-for-4? Does that mean he should be sent down? Not necessarily. Good problem to have, though. This is all good problems to have. Let's get to some of your emails, thericob@gmail.com. This one comes after Saturday's loss. Ron Shea, I'm a Francisco Lindor fan, and I believe he's a great player. He will be a Met for life, and I'm good with it. All that being said, when you're 0-for-4 on the day, you need to take a pitch. At any level in baseball, they teach you that. A weak, lazy pop-up to end the game is unacceptable on the first pitch of an at-bat from Francisco. Excuse my language, but why the F did we not pinch hit for Tomas Nito? I speak for every Met fan when we were just hoping he wouldn't ground into a double play and end the game. Yes! Me too, Ron, said that earlier. Bad loss. Bad loss yesterday. Saturday. Welcome to the hot and cold 2024 New York Mets. So a couple of things. Once they pinch hit for Narvaez with Nito on Saturday, which they did in the seventh inning, they can't pinch hit for Nito because they don't have a catcher. So if you use, let's say you use Joey Wendell because it's the bottom of the ninth inning and you're desperate and Nito stinks and the Mets somehow tie the game, you don't have a catcher. And that's the problem. That's why I go back to the seventh, and I wonder if that was the moment to pinch hit for Omar Narvaez, that may not have been the move I would have made with Carlos Mendoza. As far as Lindor is concerned, I said this earlier, Pete and I are on the same page. I'm not pissed that he swung at the first pitch. I understand what he was thinking. He was thinking, I am getting a 100-mile-per-hour fastball right down the middle, and I'm going to try to hit the crap out of it. Problem is, he didn't. Kyle Kuhn writes, Vientos. I am writing this as Brandon Nimmo flied out to right field in the bottom of the ninth inning. And by the way, the bottom of the ninth inning, he flied out. When did he fly out in the bottom of the ninth inning? Which game was this? I'm trying to think. He flied out to left field in the bottom of the ninth inning. Maybe that's what he's thinking. All right. Am I the only one to think that pinch hitting Vientos for Brett Beatty in the bottom of the ninth inning is crazy? I know it ended up working out as he got a base hit, but he has only played one game in the majors this season, whereas Beatty has shown some very positive performances. I would trust Beatty over Vientos in that spot, at least personally. Curious on your thoughts.
No. Like, I didn't mind it at all because you have a lefty on the mound.
Beatty has not hit the cover off the ball, even though he did have that little bloop double in the fifth inning. And this is now talking about Sunday's game. You've got a little momentum from the fact that Vientos had two hits on Saturday.
So I didn't mind that at all. Obviously, it did work out because not only did he get a base hit, and Kyle Coon would later say, oh, yeah, by the way, he hit a game winner. That happened two innings later.
Clayton writes, he better fucking stay. I don't give a shit who we cut. Vientos better stay.
Good job, Clayton.
Jimmy writes, I'll make it quick. Is Mark Vientos here to stay? With the loss of Alvarez, this team needs the youth and excitement these young kids can bring. My gut is that he is going to stay. And my gut is I think it's going to be DJ Stewart who goes down. It's all about options. I think Beatty's a possibility, though, too. I do. I think there are a couple of warning signs that Beatty's on the table. Number one, the fact that he used him as a pinch hitter. And the number two, Mendoza claiming, like I said earlier, he's going to play Vientos over Beatty on Monday night against the right-hander in Jameson Taillon. Samuel writes, memo to David Stearns. Think we still don't need Vientos in the big leagues? Owen Hoff, the big Stearns believer. You still support the decision to not start the year with him? Yeah, Pete. You still support Vientos being in AAA for the last month?
I don't think I ever supported that from the beginning, though. I mean, I said I guess when I was talking about who's going to make that final roster spot, I figured Zach Short because David Stearns made it clear he was going to get he was in the mix, and I expected the versatility with Short. But here's another thing too, just to piggyback off of why Vientos is probably going to stay up here, dude. The guy's killing it in AAA. At some point in time, like his numbers are if he goes back to AAA, that's like a demotion he didn't deserve.
Yeah. I don't think you can. I think even like with an 0-for-4 against Jameson Taillon, the game-winning home run, the three hits, the performance in AAA, like you pointed out, I think he's staying. I think it's a matter of how he stays, like who goes down, and then what his playing time looks like upon staying. But I'm with you, Pete. I'm with everybody. Like, he's going to stay. I think this is a very similar Mike Jacobs situation as it was in 2005. Mike Garofolo writes, is that the football writer, Mike Garofolo?
I don't think so. If it is, thanks for listening.
Hold on a second. Let me check this out. Oh, no, maybe it's not. The biggest takeaway after a big win is Carlos Mendoza. It's hard not to love the two-out, two-strike, one-strike away from losing base hit from Harrison Bader, followed by the two-strike, two-run game-winning home run by Mark Vientos. How can you not be happy for that kid? But my biggest takeaway is Carlos Mendoza. It's only April, but Mendoza has already demonstrated that he's willing to manage in a way that even Buck rarely did, by relying on his eyes to make the best decision in the moment, in particular big moments, regardless of what the matchup analytics say he should do. Mendoza's decision to let Quintana finish the eighth based on the way Quintana was throwing today and Quintana's conviction is everything we've been missing in a Mets manager since maybe Terry Collins, who perhaps relied a little too much on his gut feeling. See Matt Harvey, game five. Yeah, thank you for bringing that up there, Michael. I am pumped for Vientos and impressed with Bader, but man, it's an even greater feeling to think that we have a manager at the helm with a real feel for the game in the moment whom we trust to set Mets players up for success in crucial situations. Let's go, Mets. Yeah, I loved what he did with Quintana on Sunday. And I think it was before the Contreras at-bat. There were two outs in the eighth inning, and Mendoza went out. He went out to the mound. And when he went out to the mound, I'm thinking to myself, you can't take him out here. You can't. He hasn't given up a base runner since the error. That's not even his fault. Since the Cardinals scored that one run in the fifth inning, like, you can't take him out. And Mendoza went out there. He talked to Quintana. Quintana said, I'm good to go. And then Quintana responds by striking out Wilson Contreras. So I think that was a real positive sign. My issues with some of Mendoza's decisions are very much minor. You know, we talked about the decision on Saturday earlier in the pod about using Nito to pinch hit for Narvaez. I didn't love it, but they're really minor by nature. I think the way you handle your bullpen, the way you handle your staff is really, really important. And I think on a rare day where you get Quintana dealing,
and keeping his pitch count low, you got to take advantage of it. And I thought he did a great job doing that. A couple of other things. Number one, I read today from Tim Healy, I think published this in Newsday. The Mets haven't worn their black jerseys or their alternate blue jerseys this season because they haven't received the right pants from Nike. Is that not unbelievable? Now, there is a story coming out that I think Jeff Passan published it, that there's a memo from the Players Association where they're going to fix these jersey issues. Eventually, the names on the back are going to be bigger again. The pants aren't going to be see-through anymore. So we are going to fix this issue, which is not a surprise. But I hadn't even thought about that they have not worn their black jerseys yet. We did see the City Connect on Saturday. I like the City Connect personally. I think they're pretty good. If I had to find a negative, it's that you could fool me and say they're Yankee jerseys. Like, they don't have a deep connection to the Mets. You can't tell me the purple for the 7 line is. But I think they're still cool. Like, they're a cool-looking jersey. I just don't think they feel very Mets-like. But I like the City Connects. What about you, Pete?
No, I love them. I mean, I love the helmet with the freaking bridge across it. I think it looks awesome. I understand that you said that there's no connection. I think you were the one who said it. If they put Queens rather than NYC across the chest, that would have been perfect. But I actually love it. I like the choice. It's not all gray from bottom, top to bottom. I like the white pants that go with it. So there's a little, you know, contrast with the color. I think they did a great job. They could have really destroyed it, let me put it that way.
Oh, no. I mean, you look at some of the other ones and, you know.
You see the Phillies, by the way?
Yes.
Oh, I want to vomit looking. Well, first of all, I hate the Phillies anyway, but then you look at their jersey. It is one of the grossest things I've ever seen. So terrible job on that.
Yeah, no, I like the City Connects. I may even get one. I may pull a Met jersey at some point and buy one.
Authentic? Because it's $500.
It's $500?
Yeah, who tweeted it today? I think it was it Laura Albanese or somebody did. They went to the stadium. They took a picture of the price tag. It was $450, but with tax, it's $500.
Oh, that's insane. Yeah, I wouldn't get a jersey, actually. I think what I would get is a hoodie. I'm a big hoodie guy. So the City Connect hoodies look pretty good. A couple of other things. Number one, David Peterson and Tyler Miguel are on their way back. They're making rehab starts. So the David Peterson timetable, a lot quicker than I thought. He looked great. He pitched at single A on Sunday. But keep this in mind with Peterson and McGill. The rehab clock has started, and that is 30 days. So we could see David Peterson and Tyler McGill sometime in the middle of May, but they both have options. So if there isn't room, if the Mets aren't recalling them, it's okay. They can actually activate them in 30 days and then option them down to AAA. I'm not sure that's going to happen. Let's see the state of the Met rotation, the state of the Met bullpen by the time we get to the middle of May. But both David Peterson and Tyler McGill are on their way back.
I got something I would like to throw in there, and I don't know if you have it, but the Rockies have 7 wins. The Marlins have 6 wins. The White Sox have 6 wins. Reed Garrett has 5.
That's funny.
Just saying.
No, that's amazing. Reed Garrett, you know, just piling up the victories out of the bullpen is kind of badass. Like, oh, I know, dude. It doesn't always have to do with him. Sometimes it's just about the luck. But yes, Reed Garrett having 5 victories is insane. It really is. And he continues to be great, man. He is one of those weapons now. And the strength of the New York Mets, we're a month into the season now. We are 27 games into the season now, 14-13. The clear strength of the New York Mets in this moment is their bullpen. I don't think there's any doubt about that. It's also funny looking at the National League. It's early, so you try to find patterns, but you don't want to over-exaggerate some of the patterns. Here are a few of the things that we know and we shouldn't be surprised by. The Atlanta Braves are really good. The Philadelphia Phillies are really good. The LA Dodgers at some point will win the National League West. I'm not sure about the Central. I mean, both the Cubs and the Brewers are off to good starts. But that second and third wild card spot in the National League feels gettable. You know Atlanta or Philly wins the East, probably Atlanta. And the Phillies are better than us, no question about it. You know the Dodgers win the West. You know somebody wins the Central. And that allows you 2 more playoff spots. And in this moment, 15-13 is the third playoff spot. I'm not trying to give you a, hey, if the season ends today thing. Just noticing the shape of the National League and what it may take to be a playoff team. But we got a big 4 games coming up against the Cubbies. As I mentioned, the Cubbies have pitched incredibly well. They've played really well. They're facing Jameson Taillon on Monday. He's off to a great start this year. They're facing Javier Assad on Tuesday. He's off to a great start. And they're facing Shota Imanaga. Man, we went through this during the offseason. Imanaga?
It's not Monaga, which no. Sounds like what you're trying to say.
Imanaga.
There you go.
Shota Imanaga, who is off to a brilliant start. Have you seen his numbers? He's 4-0 with an ERA of 1. So that'll be a test on Wednesday. And then this Ben Brown will pitch Thursday, who got beat up in his last start. We got Seve, we got Manaya, we got Budo, and then we got Hauser. If Adrian Hauser, who so far this season has made 5 starts, 2 of them have been abysmal, 1 of them has been bad, and the other 2 have been solid. If he gives 1 more abysmal start, I'm done. Then you can call up Joey Lucchesi or Christian Scott, and we can move him to the bullpen, and we can move on. But I'll give him that start against the Cubbies, but he cannot have another dud because the Mets have the depth to say, you know what, Adrian? You're going to the bullpen. You'll have a role on this team, trust me. You'll pitch plenty, but you're going to the bullpen.
What? Now, you just named a name right there, Christian Scott, who's been pitching fantastic. Give me a timeline. How soon are we going to see him? I mean, you between McGill, between Peterson, you said Lucchesi, you got 4 guys you're going to juggle for 1 spot, but has Scott earned a spot yet?
I don't think so. I mean, Scott's pitching really well, and in his last start, they pulled him pretty quickly after like 70 or 75 pitches because it was his first start this year on regular rest. I think the Mets are going to take the slow game with him, especially because they have other options. I think if they didn't have other options, it may be a different story, but if I had to guess, I don't think we're going to see him until after the All-Star break. Now, there was another piece of news from the minor leagues that sucks. Nate Lavender, a guy we fell in love with in spring training. He's going to get a second opinion, so it's not official yet, but there's a good chance he's going to need season-ending elbow surgery. So a guy that we thought we would see him at some point this season, unfortunately, has been hit with that pitching injury bug. But as far as Christian Scott's concerned, I think they're going to play the slow game because they have a lot of options. But I'm curious how quickly they will pull Adrian Hauser. You do have reinforcements on the way in McGill, in Peterson, Lucchesi down at AAA. You've got other options. We'll see when the Mets decide to say, you know what? We're going to check in on these other options. You could always email the pod to ricob@gmail.com. Could always leave us a voicemail, which is 725-222-8699. We got a 4-gamer coming up, 4-game series with the Cubs, which means we will give you an extra Rico. In fact, you know what we're going to give you on Monday night after the opening game of this series against the Chicago Cubs? We're going to do it this time. We're going to do a drive home Rico. You ready for that one?
I'm ready. Are you ready?
Well, I think what's exciting about the Drive Home Rico is I've done Drive Home Ricos. I've done a lot of drive homes before, but never airing live on YouTube. That's never happened. So Hoff secretly hopes I get into some kind of accident because he thinks that'll get a lot of views.
What we will get, though, is in the parking lot coming, escaping the stadium, you will get at least 1 or 2 people to stop you in between to say what's up. And, you know, say hi and stuff like that. So that will be live. That's great.
That will be live. Yes. My plan of attack for this is that, and you can adjust accordingly. When that game ends, as I'm leaving my seat, because I'm going to the game Monday night, that's why I'm doing a drive home. I'm going to hook my phone up immediately to Pete Hoffman. So I want to get that thing done. Like we're all set up as I'm leaving the stadium. So that as soon as I sit in my beautiful Jeep, I could press a button and we could start because the one thing I can't do is fiddle with anything while I'm driving. That's incredibly dangerous. I could just talk about the Mets while I'm driving. That's okay. So if you want to watch that live or listen to it live, I can tell you it'll be 5 minutes after the game is over. And if it's not, then something went wrong. Maybe with me, maybe with Pete, something went wrong and we didn't get it working. But we will attempt to do a Monday night game 1 of the series against the Cubs, drive home Rico Bronya. Take a listen to that. Either way, thank you very much for subscribing, downloading, and listening to another edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.